Hello, business owners, entrepreneurs, and executives. Welcome to today's Business Radio, a new hybrid radio show that airs both on air as well as online and on demand. We discuss all the topics relating to your business. Today's Business Radio interviews experienced business advisors to help you build enterprise value, improve profitability, and plan for your eventual exit. Whether you're an entrepreneur just starting out, a seasoned business owner, or a top-level executive, today's Business Radio will help you achieve your personal and professional goals. Today's Business Radio is available around the clock, around the world, online, and on demand at todaysbusinessradio.com. Now, the host of today's Business Radio, Tom Lyons.
Hello, this is Tom Lyons here with my co-host Sam Zordich and our producer Jorgie Jorgensen. Our guest today is David Brower from the CPA firm Lurie Besikoff Lapidus & Company in Minneapolis. David, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your position at the firm?
Well, this is David Brower. I'm a partner in the tax department at Lurie Besikoff. I primarily focus on business taxation and the owners of small businesses.
Small businesses, when you say that, what size?
You know, we have a wide range. We have everywhere from startup entities to entities with a few hundred million dollars of revenue. So all the way up to probably about $750 million in revenue. So it is a very wide variety.
Okay.
And today we're going to talk about business tax changes. It seems like there's been changes. Every time I turn around, there's new changes to the tax law. Congress has been busy, haven't they?
Well, they've been busy. They're always busy. It's not always just Congress being busy. Luckily, one of the fun parts about tax is that it's constantly changing. Some of the stuff we'll talk about mostly today are the tax provisions that were in the stimulus package that was passed back in February.
So we really should say the date today.
Well, sure. Today we're recording this on March 20th, 2009, and the things we're going to talk about are the things that are in effect today.
Yes.
And our listeners should keep in mind that if they're listening to this 3 or 4 months from now or 6 months from now, who knows what Congress and the new administration
will be some new things. Obviously there will be new things, but a lot of the big items that we'll talk about today will be still in play for the whole year.
But it's very important on this topic to consult your advisors and get current information anytime you're doing this stuff.
Yes.
Well, where do we want to start? The business tax changes. If I'm a profitable business and I've been in business for quite some time, I have to put some equipment in place this year. What should we be thinking about?
Well, a lot of the interesting provisions of the new tax stimulus bill were really extensions of items that were put into place last year. Those are this concept of bonus depreciation, which really was started, it came first into play back after September 11th and went away for a few years, but is now back. And so as a business owner, if you're trying to, you know, one of the big things about taxation has always been taxes are instilled to try and influence behavior. One of the behaviors they're trying to influence now is people spending money. The economy really is built a lot on consumption. So one of the big things that they're trying to do is give people an incentive to go out and spend money. So in that vein, what they're allowing is if you're buying personal property, desks, computers, manufacturing equipment, you're allowed to take half of the cost of that property that you place in service during 2009 now and go ahead and expense that no matter what the profits of the business are, no matter how much property you buy. One of the caveats is that it has to be brand new property. You can't purchase used property.
So these are big ticket items, furniture, fixture, and equipment that you'd capitalize in your balance sheet.
Correct. Normally stuff that would be capitalized, instead of getting the depreciation lives of the old, you get to take half of it, take it right away up front, and then depreciate the rest over the normal life.
So the bonus and bonus depreciation is that extra 50% you can take this year.
Correct.
So long as Congress doesn't make us give it back. I'm a little leery of that bonus at this time.
It's not a bonus of that sort, so I'm not worried about a 90% tax rate coming out.
That's good. So we just get to write that off this year and shelter some income with it.
It's a shelter, but one thing I would caution is that is a shelter for federal purposes. The state of Minnesota and many other states are not following what the federal government does and are making you add that back for Minnesota purposes.
So you have to keep a separate depreciation schedule for federal purposes and state purposes and make adjustments on the returns?
For some states, you have separate schedules, but for states like Minnesota, it's just you put in a number of what you took as bonus depreciation. You get that over the next 5 years instead of right away.
Sam, you're getting all this. You've got business owners that can't even read their income and expense statement. How are they going to understand this?
Exactly.
One of Sam's tools is helping business owners train them so that they can read their financial statements. It seems a lot of them struggle with that.
Well, it is a struggle. You get people who are very good at running a business, and you know, tax is one aspect of the decision making process. It should never be the sole. Shouldn't be the driver, but you know, it is important to talk to your tax person. Because there's subtle differences that you can do in a transaction and get very different tax answers.
Planning can help save a lot of money is what you're saying.
Correct.
How would this change their cash flow?
You know, where it's really going to come into play is close to the end of the year. If you're sitting in October and you know that you're going to have a lot of equipment that you need to purchase, and you're thinking maybe you'll be buying it in January or February of 2010, one of the big things to do would be to go ahead and buy that in November, December, get it placed into service, because you'll get an extra 50% deduction now in 2009 instead of getting a slower write-off in 2010.
Are there limitations on that? Can I go buy $10 million worth of equipment?
For bonus purposes, you can buy $10 million, you can buy $20 million, it doesn't matter. It just has to be new property, you can't buy used property. Unlike the other provision that allows you for additional write-offs, which is a Section 179 write-off, which has limitations. You can expense the entire purchase up to $250,000 for the year, but it does start to phase out if you buy too much. It starts around that $800,000 range. And so if you buy over a million one of property throughout the year, you do not have the ability to do any 179 expense.
When you're working with your smaller business clients, how do you advise them between those two?
Well,
or is?
You know, if you're a profitable company still, the 179 is the first choice because that's a dollar-for-dollar write-off. The bonus depreciation is if you're buying excess items, or if you're in a loss position, you might not even want to, you can elect out of bonus, but most likely you're still going to want to create that larger loss. You can create a larger loss in a business with bonus depreciation. You can just reduce income for 179.
Now, there's been some net operating loss changes as well, as long as you're talking about the loss.
Yeah, the net operating loss changes are actually really intriguing. That's one of the different items. It's the IRS has really, well, Congress has really provided a choice. You get to kind of pick and choose what you want to do on this net operating loss. So if I've been profitable over the years, and this is for businesses, it's a partnership corporation, S corporation, or a sole proprietorship, meaning a Schedule C if you file for your 1040. If you've always been profitable in the past and now you've had a bad year in 2008, normally you would have been able to carry back your loss 2 years and forward 20. Now they're giving you the choice.
Let's stop there now.
Yeah.
Let's say you've been profitable and the last 2 years, like everybody else, were tough years and you've got some losses.
Right.
You can carry them back 2 years and file an amended return and get a tax refund. Is that what we're talking about?
You can get a refund of taxes that you paid for income purposes. Correct.
And if you can't use them all up, carrying them back 2 years, then you can carry them forward.
Then it gets carried forward for up to 20 years.
Up to 20 years.
And so if you don't get profitable in 20 years, then you start to lose those losses.
You probably lost the company anyway.
There's a good chance of that if you haven't.
So what are the changes to the NOL, the net operating loss?
The big change is, and it's for relatively kind of those mid-level companies. You have to have average sales of less than $15 million for the last 3 years. So you just kind of look at your tax return, and if the sales for the last 3 years have been less than $15 million, you will qualify to elect a different carryback statute. And the interesting thing is they didn't just say you can carry back 5 years. Like with the normal carryback, you have to carry back the 2 years. With the new statute, you can choose to carry back 3, 4, or 5 years, which means you have the ability to really look at your situation and figure out what's best for you.
In terms of how much tax can I recoup?
And how much tax are you going to recoup? What type of income you have? When you start talking about flow-through entities, partnerships, S-corps, that income flows to the person's 1040, and they pay tax there. Now, with a NOL that gets created, they would come to their 1040 and have the ability to carry back. So they would want to look at those tax years 3, 4, and 5 years ago, because maybe in year 5, they had a $30 million capital gain, which they only paid 15% tax on. Now, if 4 years ago they didn't have a capital gain, all they had was regular income.
Ordinary income,
and they were paying 34 cents on the dollar for every amount of income, they would not want to carry back the full 5 years. They would want to carry it back only 4 years, because they're going to get a much greater return for their dollar.
Because it was ordinary income instead of capital gains.
Sure. You're talking close to 20 cents for each dollar of NOL.
And on the tax pass-through entities,
yes,
they can still do that net operating loss carry back for 4 to 5 years, is that right?
Yes, they can. It goes to the individual, and they still have the ability to make that carry back decision.
So the planning in those decisions is really important, to go see what category of income that you had and where you can get the maximum benefit.
And, you know, it also throws in the whole thought of maybe you didn't have a whole lot of income in those past years, but you're really planning, you had this one bad year and you're really expecting your income to shoot up in the going forward. And who knows what tax rates are going to be going forward. You may also need to look at the planning of carrying back versus disavowing the carry back claim to carry forward. Now, it's always hard to advise someone to pass up money that they've paid taxes on for what may happen in the future. So,
it's a crystal ball thing.
Yeah. It is. It's a very difficult situation there. It's hard to advise anybody not to carry back.
Sounds like business owners need to sit down with their accountant and go over these new rules and determine where the best options are.
Yes.
And then put a plan in place to take advantage of that.
Yeah, it's the planning here is very important, and it requires them to really focus and look at what they think the business will do. And part of the things that you can't really plan on is what is going to happen to tax rates going forward. You know, there was a lot of talk that they'd be going up already. They're not going up for 2009. There's certain provisions that have the potential of expiring in the next couple of years, like the capital gains rates may be going up, qualified dividends may be going away. Lots of things like that you also have to start planning on.
I think Congress has pretty well guaranteed us that taxes are going up. We just don't know where yet.
We don't know where, and we don't know to whom yet.
Sure.
So.
Capital gains, even if they do nothing, are going to go back to 20%.
Correct. But the bigger issue would be whether or not the dividend rates go away, because if the qualified dividend provision goes away, that doesn't go from 15 to 20%. Dividends then go from 15 back to ordinary rates.
Back to ordinary income rates.
Correct.
Which the top rate now is what, 35?
35, correct.
So that's a huge difference.
And actually there's a window there that's 38, 39% for a marginal rate to get you caught back up to the 34, 35
now, brackets. If that was taken out, what kind of an effect would that have on spending?
What would that have on spending? Well, obviously, whether or not people are paying dividends any longer these days is one thing that's going to be affected. But one of the big effects would be to stock prices of some of those traditional dividend paying companies. You know, when the qualified dividend rate came into play, it was an interesting phenomenon to watch, where those companies that were high dividend paying stocks actually got more of a boost in their stock price than other companies. And you'd expect to see the exact opposite happen.
Because people wanted the dividend income, because it was taxed.
Well, all of a sudden,
the
dividend, if you priced a stock based on your future cash flow that you would get, all of a sudden the dividend paying stocks had a higher cash flow, because it went from paying
ordinary income tax rates.
You went from getting 65% of every dollar to 85%. So it was a a nice little bump for those kind of companies.
And if that changes, that'll all change again.
It just reverts. And the interesting thing is the qualified dividend rates do benefit some of these small companies who are organized as C-Corps. Not that they are typically, we don't advise too many of these lower startup companies to organize as C-Corps, but you still see it occasionally.
Once in a while, and we'll get into those issues on another show.
Yes.
Now, are there some new rules for debt relief as well?
There are some debt relief rules for businesses that have not gotten a lot of publicity at this point, but I think are very interesting opportunities. With a lot of this balance sheets and a lot of debt, and people are going to have trouble paying off their debt going forward, they've allowed you to recognize debt forgiveness income in 2009 and 2010. And after you determine whether or not you get any sort of exclusion with insolvency, bankruptcy, some of these other things that would allow you to exclude that income, if you're not able to exclude the income, you do now have the opportunity to elect to not pay tax until 2014.
Hey, let's back up a minute now.
Yes.
Small business owner, you've got some debt with your bank. You're having problems repaying it. You've got too much debt. You find a way to find a new lender, and you go to your old lender, and you cut a deal, and you pay them 75 cents on a dollar.
Right. And you would have 25 cents on the dollar would be debt forgiveness income to you at this point.
So that's income to the business at that point.
Correct.
Okay.
And most likely in the scenario you just described, you would not have any sort of exclusion because you seem to still be solvent. So now that you've recognized that you got 25 cents on the dollar of income, you can elect, and this is, you do have to elect, you can elect to take that as income but not pay tax on it until the years 2014 to 2018, and it'll be equal in those 5 years. So 20% each year you'll pay tax on. Now, if you do make that election...
Under these new rules, then, Congress has given you time to earn some money to pay the tax on that income because you really didn't have the money. You just had debt relief.
Correct.
And where do you find the money to pay the tax? So this is relief in terms of it's giving you time to pay the tax on that.
It's allowing you to clean up your balance sheet and earn the money to actually pay for that tax.
Pay the tax. Okay.
For that relief that you got. Now, the interesting thing is if you do make this election, you do not get to kind of look and say that you have an insolvency exclusion in the future. We've determined its income. No matter what, you're going to have to pay tax on that. I guess pay tax on that as long as the company is still going.
Well, let's go to the other scenario. Let's say you've got all this debt and you can't pay it, and you declare bankruptcy, and the debt is written off by the bank. Is that income at that point as well?
Well, it is income. However, it may not be taxable income, and there's a big difference there. For financial purposes, you did receive a benefit to the company, and it's income that you have recognized. But there are many exclusions in the tax code that allow you to not have to recognize that as taxable income and not pay tax. And insolvency, bankruptcy, those are some of those instances where, although it is income, you don't have to pay tax on it, but you do get some haircuts to other items, may have to lower the basis of some of your property, may have to forego the use of some net operating losses. Some other attributes that you have to give up in order to not pay tax on that.
Seems like piling on a little bit. You're in a bad situation, you can't pay your debt, and you still have some ramifications from it.
Well, you can't pay the debt, but you still don't have a cash flow hit, at least.
Well, that's small favors, I guess. Thank God for small favors.
Yep.
What about the rules on reacquired debt? What is that?
Well, that's with reacquired debt is the technical piece that they're doing for this debt forgiveness income. If you either trade that debt in with another bank at a haircut, if you pay off a portion of it but not all of it, if you are just told, you know what, you can't pay it, we're going to forgive that, these are all definitions that meet this rule for the deferring the debt forgiveness income. So if any of those sorts of things happen, you qualify to defer paying tax until 2014.
So once again, it just gives you some time to
earn
some money that you can eventually pay for that. That's a good thing. I don't know how you'd pay for it if you didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There were some rules for gain on sale. Subchapter S corporations, if you've been subchapter S since day one, or if you've been a subchapter S for at least 10 years by the time you sell, you get tax pass-through treatment.
Correct.
But under other circumstances where if you just elected sub S recently, you might have some double taxation within the C corporation and then some tax pass-through. Have they changed some rules on that?
They have changed the rules, and it's a very complex basic rule. Basically, if you were a C corporation and you made that determination to become a flow through, so you made an S election to be so that the company's not paying the tax and then you don't have to have dividends, so there's not a double tax that happens.
Tax pass through or entity.
Right. Now, for 10 years, you had to keep what was known as a built-in gain. You had to determine what the gain to if you had sold the company would have been on the date that you elected to be an S corp. And if you sold the company or a significant part of the company within 10-year period, you would have to pay tax at the corporate level and then still pay tax on the income that flows through to you.
So you'd essentially have to determine the value of the corporation on the date you elected subchapter S?
Correct.
And then the difference between that value and the value on the date you sold would be subject to tax pass-through, but the rest of it would be subject to tax within the C corporation and then tax again when you distribute it out.
Correct. So if it went up in value from the date that you made an S election, that increase after the S election only has single tax
pass-through.
But that piece that was there when you made the conversion will always be subject to double tax for at least 10 years. Now, what they've done is said that if you recognize a gain in that sort of in a sale transaction in either 2009 or 2010, and your S election was 7 years ago, the built-in gain tax does not apply to you. So if you were in 2002, now all of a sudden you're going to get out of paying built-in gain tax.
So they've shortened that period.
They've shortened it, but it's only a two-year window. So if you're in year six right now, next year would be your year seven. You wouldn't have to pay the tax. But unless something gets extended after 2010, all of a sudden you may be back into built-in gain tax for 1 year. So you
What do you think the rationale was for that change?
Well, you know, one of the interesting things is there's always situations where there may be an influential taxpayer who has some sort of connection. Yes. I have not heard a story about who this one is.
But, yeah, right.
But, you know, there's also, it's paralleling a little more with some of the partnership rules where you have a 7-year tracking on some of the gains that on contribution to a partnership. So it is getting a little bit more in line with some of the other parts of the tax code. But most likely, there's probably some big hitters out there who...
Sounds like the estate planning thing. If you're going to die, you better do it next year.
Next year's a great year to die.
Think they'll have some people on life support in November and December?
I will be surprised if that comes to pass. I think that there's a lot of incentive on everyone's side to get some different rules set up for that.
What other changes have we got to discuss today?
Some of the other changes... you know, there's the built-in gain tax, and there's some interesting work opportunity credits that also were put out there. And work opportunity has always kind of been out there for hiring of felons. Again, this is one of those situations where Congress is trying to instill a certain type of behavior. And they've looked at kind of these large populations of people who are having a lot of trouble finding work. And they identified two and added those to the work opportunity credit. And those two groups that they've targeted now are unemployed veterans and what they call disconnected youth. And I'll give you a little bit of the definitions there. And most of us don't want to be associated with that disconnected youth.
Yeah, what's a disconnected youth? What's that?
You know, the veteran one is the easy one to define. That is a veteran who was discharged or released from active duty within the last 5 years before you hired them, and they were receiving unemployment for at least 4 weeks in the last year before you hired them. Now, the disconnected youth, this is something that the state agencies have to certify that people meet these definitions. So this is what the disconnected youth are. They have to be between the ages of 16 and 24, not attending school for the prior 6 months, not having regularly been employed in the prior 6 months, and one of the other subjective types of things is they have to be lacking sufficient basic skills.
Now, what fits into the basic skills?
I think what that is.
They want us to go hire deaf and dumb kids that are roaming the streets or what?
I think really what it is it's not people who have a trade.
Okay. So it's not ability to write.
It's not ability to read or write. Okay. It's do they have a trade that they are skilled in?
So this is just basic labor.
This is basic labor that you're looking for.
We've identified the two groups, the unemployed veterans and the disconnected youth. What is the work opportunity credit? What does that amount to for a business owner?
Well, for a business owner, what that's going to mean is you get a credit on the first $7,000 or $6,000 of wages that you pay them, it's really going to mean you get a credit of about $2,400 per employee that you hire that meets that classification.
This is not a deduction. This is a
tax credit.
Tax credit.
Correct.
Okay, so this is just to stimulate business employers to
this is
hire
to
these
help.
Groups of people.
This is to give a business extra incentive to hire somebody that meets this criteria.
Okay.
Let's look at the crystal ball for just a second. What do you think is going to be out there 6 months? What is all of this going to...
In the next 6 months, I think, you are seeing a lot. I am seeing people make a lot of business purchases, a lot of the equipment purchases. I think that's one of the easy things to do. I think we are seeing a lot of people triggering net operator not trigger but incur net operating losses because of the tough economy right now, and so this will give them the ability to get a little more cash put back into the company. And it does give people the incentive to get their financial books in order so that we can get tax returns done promptly so that they can get the money back as quick as they can. It's important, and the IRS has actually been pretty good about getting refunds paid quickly and processing these forms.
Sounds to me like once the hectic tax season is over, you're through the worst of the corporate season. Now you're in the individuals plus the extensions. But once that's over, business owner should schedule a meeting with his CPA and sit down and review some of these changes and do some serious planning.
We always encourage people to meet with their tax advisors at least quarterly. I think at least every 3 months you should be sitting down so that your tax advisor knows what's going on in the company. Knows what you're looking at doing, knows what you're thinking about doing. This is something that we can help greatly with the planning process.
David, this has been very interesting today. I'm Tom Lyons for my co-host Sam Zordich and our producer Jordy Jorgensen. I'd like to thank David Brower from Lurie Besigoff Lapidus and Company for being with us today.
It was a treat.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening to todaysbusinessradio.com.
You've been listening to Today's Business Radio with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the owner of Phelan Partners Limited, an M&A advisory and consulting firm. Today's Business Radio is also available around the clock and around the world at todaysbusinessradio.com. That's todaysbusinessradio.com. All content provided by Today's Business Radio is provided for general information only and should not be treated as a substitute for professional advice from your legal, accounting, and business advisors. Today's Business Radio is not liable for the contents of this podcast, nor does it endorse any commercial product or service mentioned or advised in this podcast. All radio shows, podcasts, and other content provided by Today's Business Radio is copyrighted and may not be reproduced or downloaded for any reason without prior written consent by Today's Business Radio. If you have a topic you'd like covered at Today's Business Radio, log on to our website at todaysbusinessradio.com and submit your comments and questions. Thanks for listening to todaysbusinessradio.com.